Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site.
The deadly shooting of 10 schoolgirls in October 2006 rocked the Amish community of Nickel Mines, Pennsylvania, and of course it shocked the world. But amidst the horror of that, forgiveness triumphed. The Amish are a pretty interesting group. They're often stereotyped as backward, technology-denying folks, but there's much more to this unique community than meets the eye. Dr. Donald Crable was actually on the scene of the shooting in the following days, and he's written a book about what he found out afterwards called Amish Grace. And he joins us now. Don, welcome to Open House.
Thank you.
It really was a horrific event. Refresh our memories as to what happened that terrible day back in October 2006.
Well, it was a beautiful day here, crystal blue sky, and a 34-year-old gunman who lived about a mile from the school came into this one-room Amish school. It had 26 pupils, age 6 to 14, and he had a automatic pistol, and he ordered all the boys and the adults and the teacher out, and he was alone with 10 young girls, and he barricaded himself in. And when the police arrived, then he began to shoot. He fired off 13 shots in 7 seconds. He had the girls' legs tied together. They were on their stomachs on the floor, and he fired into the back of their heads execution style.
Oh. Do we know exactly now what the motive was for Charles Roberts? Was his name, wasn't it?
His name was Charles Roberts IV. He left a suicide note for his wife and children and also told her on the phone that he was angry at God and he hated God and hated himself because their firstborn daughter, 10 years earlier, had died prematurely. So he apparently was holding all of this anger in his heart and saw this as some type of revenge or retaliation for what he considered that injustice that his daughter died.
Why the Amish community, though? Why did he target this particular schoolroom?
He knew these children because he picked up milk from the farms. He had a big tank truck and hauled the milk to local dairies. So he knew them, and this particular school was somewhat isolated. It was a quarter of a mile away from the closest Amish or other homes. There was actually another school closer to his home, but that school was closer to local residences. So we think that he assumed these would be compliant, innocent girls that would obey him, and that he could barricade himself into the schoolhouse and not be detected for a number of hours. Mm. He clearly intended to molest them sexually. However, he was not able to do that because when he started shooting, the police rushed into the building, and when he saw them coming through, then he shot himself.
You can see that there is a certain degree of cowardice involved, and I say that sensitively because, you know, he did certainly pick his victims, and he certainly picked his location, didn't he? So he wasn't going to be quickly stood against.
Right. I think he assumed that he could you know, barricade himself in so well that he'd at least have some hours alone. But the fact of the matter is the teacher escaped, and she called 911, an emergency phone number, and the police were on the site within about 10 minutes. It was very confusing the next 6 hours because helicopters came and took the 10 girls to various hospitals, some hospitals as far as 100 or 200 miles away. And so the parents, for a number of hours, had no idea where their children were or if they were dead or alive. And by the end of the day, 5 of them had died, and the other 5 were in very serious and critical condition.
Don, do we know any more about Charles Roberts IV and his mental capacity or his mental state? Because it's one thing to be angry at God, it's another thing to go and murder people about that.
We don't know a whole lot about it. I think this caught his wife by surprise. I interviewed her grandfather, who lived just 100 feet away from the home, and he said Charles was always very quiet, shy, and introverted. But we don't know of any previous history of mental illness or mental condition that would suggest any clues as to why this happened.
Mm-hmm. Donald Crable is with us. He's the author of this book, Amish Grace, talking about some of the amazing things that happened as a result of this horrible shooting back in 2006 at this little Amish community in Pennsylvania. Don, how was the loss of those five schoolgirls felt in the nickel mines community?
Well, it was an enormous amount of pain and grief that the Amish experienced. The funerals were held Thursday and Friday of that week. The shooting took place on Monday, and then the funeral and burial of the shooter took place on Saturday. The Amish have some unique rituals in terms of how they process grief. They gather together in their homes 2 days before the funeral to view the body, and just visitors come and speak to the bereaved. They also, women wear black for a year afterwards if they've lost a child.
Wow, a whole year.
And on Sunday afternoons, they will typically have 20 or 30 visitors come to their home of the parents of the bereaved, and that happens really for a year afterwards. So there's a great deal of community support.
I want to get to the amazing act of forgiveness that they offered to Charles Roberts IV and his family in just a few minutes, but as you interviewed people for this book that you've written, what struck you most about the Amish people? Give us a bit of a background as to who they are and why they operate the way they do.
Well, the Amish are a Christian religious community that traces their roots back to the 16th century in Switzerland and Germany at the time of the Protestant Reformation. Their ancestors emerged in 1525, 8 years after the beginning of the Reformation, because they felt the Reformation wasn't thorough enough in its break from the Catholic Church, and it wasn't going fast enough. The name Anabaptist means twice baptized or rebaptized, and at that time in Europe, to baptize adults was a capital offense. So many of their ancestors actually were burned at the stake for their religious beliefs. And that actually, in some ways, ties into how they responded to this shooting, because they have emphasized nonviolence and Jesus' teachings of love for the enemy over the centuries. And so that was one part of their history, part of their religious faith, that led to the response of forgiveness that we can talk about in a moment.
Mm. Of course, when we think of the Amish, we often think of the fact that they shun technology, television, the internet, car ownership. They, you know, ride around on buggies and things. How has that developed over the years? What's the theological reasoning behind it?
Well, in terms of their background, because of the persecution, they've emphasized a religious principle that they call separation from the world. And they would cite a number of Bible verses in the New Testament, such as love not the world or the things that are in the world, to suggest that they should have, that the church today should be a counterculture that stands apart from the main values of contemporary society. And they also raise questions about certain aspects of technology that they feel would hinder or damage the quality of their community. They actually do not shun technology. They actually do use a lot of contemporary technology, but they selectively use it. There are certain things like television or the internet or the ownership of automobiles that they reject because they feel those aspects of technology would hurt their community and harm it. But other types of technology they readily buy from retail commercial stores, and they adapt and adopt technology to fit their own purposes so that the technology doesn't erode the values that they're trying to teach their children.
Mm, okay, so to some degree, I wonder whether we've had a stereotype of the Amish and maybe we don't really understand them. They do actually use some technology.
They certainly do. In fact, here in eastern Pennsylvania, we have over 2,000 Amish-owned and operated businesses, and these are very productive, very profitable, and they use a lot of technology, manufacturing equipment, but instead of operating it by electricity, they operate it by pneumatic air under pressure, or hydraulic, oil under pressure. They don't want to be hooked up to the electric power grid. But on the other hand, the equipment that they're using is really much of it state-of-the-art technology.
It's fascinating. And why, though, the commitment to old-fashioned fashions and the period style clothing and the buggies and things like that?
Well, the buggy is a symbol of their rejection of the automobile. The automobile is sort of the central cherished symbol of American culture. In many ways, to be American is to have an automobile. It symbolizes independence and mobility. And when the automobile was coming into American life in the second decade of the 20th century, the Amish felt it would fragment their community. It would pull it apart. The children go off into cities to get jobs, and they wanted to remain a close-knit community living in a rural area. The rejection of the computer and television happens because they feel the computer and television, particularly the internet, will expose young people to values and to sex and to violence, to a lot of values that they feel would hinder the faith and hinder the cohesion and the commitment of members of their community. The clothing, I would say the most fundamental value that they reject in American culture is individualism. And clothing is a way in which, at least in American society, people express their individualism, you know, their colors, the fashions that they wear, and so on. For the Amish, to have prescribed clothing really is a rejection of that individualism, because the clothing is the property of the group. It's a public symbol of a member's commitment to the community, but also the member's rejection of the fashions and fads of individualism that would just call attention to the self.
Oh, okay. It's very interesting that so much of their lifestyle is very thought through, isn't it? It's not just simply a holding to old-fashioned things. It really is. There's a reason behind this.
There really is. And I'm actually working on a book on Amish technology, and I really argue in some ways they are more thoughtful and strategic about technology than most contemporary people are in modern societies. If a new technological gadget comes out, we just kind of buy it and use it and don't think about its social consequences. Whereas even though these people have never gone to high school, they finished their education at eighth grade, they are selectively screening the technology and trying to decide what's going to be helpful and build up and improve our community, or what's going to be a detriment to our way of life.
Hmm. Fascinating. We're talking to Dr. Donald Crable about his book Amish Grace and the amazing act of forgiveness that followed after the horrific shootings that happened there in Pennsylvania back in October 2006. Don, let's go there now. Here they were, and there's this horrific loss of these five beautiful little lives out of this Amish community. But then things did turn around when this Amish community, often despised, often stereotyped, often thought as backward, did turn around and offer a great act of forgiveness to the family of Charles Roberts IV.
The shooting happened on a Monday morning about 11:30, and 6 or 7 hours later, Amish people started going to the widow and to the family of the killer and expressing forgiveness and saying, we aren't going to hold a grudge against you. We want you to continue living in our community. We want to continue to be good neighbors, and so on. There were additional expressions of forgiveness the next day on national television programs on Tuesday morning. And then on Wednesday morning, a grandfather who lost two daughters in the schoolhouse shooting was interviewed on a local television station out at the schoolhouse. And they said, what about the killer? And he said, well, we forgive the killer. And then the reporter said, well, how is that possible? And he said, with God's help, it's possible. In addition to that, on Wednesday morning, the Amish formed a Nickel Mines Accountability Committee because they were already receiving a lot of money, donations from around the world. And they decided that a percentage of the income and the gifts that were coming, a percentage of that would be given to the widow and to the children of the killer, which was a behavioral expression of forgiveness, so to speak. Okay. And then on Saturday, at the burial of the shooter in the cemetery, about 75 people came, and over half of those were Amish people. And some of those were Amish parents who had buried their own children just a day before, 2 days before. Mm. And they came and they hugged the widow, hugged the family of the man that did the shooting, his parents and parents-in-law. And the funeral director who was there on the site said that, I realized I was witnessing a miracle. So these were some of the profound expressions of forgiveness that caught the imagination of people all around the world. And in fact, from Monday to Monday, a week after the shooting, there were over 2,400 news stories around the world in various languages and various countries that talked about the forgiveness and how stunning this was.
And of course, this was all motivated by the Amish community's desire to live out the words of Jesus as, you know, as literally as they can.
The Amish community is a Christian community, and they seek to follow the teachings of Jesus, such as to love one's enemy. They would cite verses such as the conversation Jesus has with one of his disciples, Peter, where Peter says, "How often should we forgive? Is 7 times enough?" And Jesus says, "No, 70 times 7, or some translations say 77 times, which I think Jesus had a twinkle in his eye when he said that, meaning that forgiveness should really be a habit. Mm. But especially they go to the Lord's Prayer that Jesus taught the disciples to say in Matthew's Gospel in the New Testament in chapter 6 that begins, "Our Father who art in heaven." And there in that prayer is a clause that says, "Forgive us our transgressions as we forgive those who transgress against us." And at the end of that prayer, there are two verses that specifically say, if you forgive, you will be forgiven. But if you don't forgive, you won't be forgiven. And so for the Amish, forgiveness is a very central and a high virtue and teaching in their religious tradition.
Mm. Don, as you researched this book, Amish Grace, did you get to interview Charles Roberts' wife or any other members of his family?
No, I didn't. His wife has refused to grant interviews to anyone, but I talked with the pastor of his father, and he was quite helpful in providing information about the story.
Because I'd love to know how she responded to this act of forgiveness from the Amish.
Well, I think I can speak about how the parents responded, how the man that did the shooting, his parents. And if you think about this, this would be really a terrible thing if your son had committed this kind of atrocity against 10 innocent little girls. What these parents did, they came and visited every Amish home 2 or 3 months later and spent 3 hours in an evening with the parents. And you can imagine how painful that would have been, because there would be an empty seat at the table. Mm. One of the children might be there with scars all over her face from the shooting. But that took a great deal of spiritual fortitude and courage, and I think symbolizes a reconciliation between the family of the man that did the shooting and the Amish parents. But I think that response of those parents was largely possible because of the forgiving way in which the Amish responded, with a real sense of God's grace to the shooting in the first place.
Yeah. This is Open House. We're talking to Don Crable about Amish Grace. We'll podcast this via theopenhouse.net.au. Don, with, the members of Charles Roberts' family then being in the homes of these Amish people, what does that mean for, I guess, the Amish sense of separation from the world?
Well, I would say, first of all, the Amish have a lot of very strong and positive relationships with their outside neighbors. Separation from the world doesn't mean that they're cut off from the outside world. It's more of a symbolic rejection of the world or mass culture because of their dress and rejection of certain types of technology. But they do have a lot of pleasant and neighborly relationships with outsiders, and I'm sure for the Amish parents, they respected the fact that the parents of the killer had the courage to come and do this.
Yes. Do you have ongoing relationships with the Amish community, Don?
I do.
Yeah.
I have been studying the Amish community over the last 25 years, and so I have dozens of friends, actually, out in the Amish community, and have made some new friends in the Nickel Mines Amish community as a result of this tragedy.
And can you convert into the community, or is it just by birth only?
No, you can convert. I would say across the United States there probably are 100 people who are currently members of the Amish church who have come in from the outside and who have converted to the Amish.
Mm. What words would you use to describe the Amish that you know then? How would you, sum up your research, your knowledge, your friendships with these people, and how would you describe them?
Well, I would say they're very genuine people. I have very warm friendships with a number. They're humorous. They're funny. in the sense that they enjoy humor and tell jokes. I think at first blush people might think they're very stoic and very puritanical, but they are warm human beings who are deeply committed to their way of life, but who enjoy good stories and have a lot of fun as well.
So after researching this book, after researching, you know, the amazing act of forgiveness that the Amish extended to the family of a killer, what have you learned?
Well, I learned the importance of what I've called, in a lot of the lectures I've given, forgiveness preparedness. A lot of journalists called me and talked to me in the days after the shooting and said, were these schools prepared for this? Did they have emergency evacuation plans? Did they have emergency preparedness plans? And the answer, of course not. But they were prepared to express forgiveness, and it's what I would call forgiveness preparedness. And I think that's one big lesson all of us can learn from this story, that regardless of who we are, there will be injustices that will come our way throughout our life. Some bad things will happen to all of us. And the more we can think about forgiveness in advance and prepare our hearts for that in advance, I think the better off we will be. There's been a lot of research in the last decade by psychologists on the importance of forgiveness and the way in which forgiveness can improve our mental health. It actually lowers our blood pressure, for example. So I think it behooves all of us to think in advance about whether we could make a forgiving response when some type of injustice comes our way.
Yes. How can we indeed be prepared to forgive? How can we actually develop that muscle when we might actually have to use it?
Well, I think it's important that we look at the religious resources that we have. I think when small events come, little petty things that annoy us, that's a good place to begin practicing. As one Amishman said to me, sometimes the petty things are more difficult to forgive than the big things. But I think in our day-to-day relationships, it's important that we realize that forgiveness is actually freedom. We are held hostage to the perpetrator and held hostage to some event in the past, and that obsession can really create an acidity or a form of acid in our spirit until we forgive. And there are a lot of things we can't do anything about it. But rather than engaging in retaliation, revenge, and tit for tat, it's not only wholesome for us, but it's also wholesome for our relationships if we have the personal courage to forgive. And that is what really leads to spiritual and psychological freedom.
Well, Donald, it's been fascinating to hear the story of the Amish, and very interesting to read this book, Amish Grace. Thanks for joining us on Open House to talk about it.
Well, thank you. It's been my pleasure.
Yeah, it's Donald Crable. He's a senior fellow at the Young Center of Elizabethtown College in Pennsylvania and the author of this new book, Amish Grace. Quite a fascinating read.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.